The Fed takes bold action to boost the economy.
And the ripple effects are already taking place.
Marketplace Morning Report is produced in association with the University of Southern California.
Hello from American Public Media in Los Angeles. I'm Steve Chiotakis.
And I'm Jeremy Hobson. You're listening to the Midday Update from Marketplace.org. It's Thursday, November 4th.
The Federal Reserve has two mandates: keep inflation in check and keep unemployment as low as possible. Yesterday, policymakers took a big step focused on the second mandate, jobs. The central bank decided to buy $600 billion in U.S. government bonds, a process called quantitative easing. From New York, Marketplace's Stacey Vanek Smith explains.
Quantitative easing is all about bonds.
Yes, my name is Bond, James Bond.
Not that Bond, but the same coming to the rescue idea. The Federal Reserve buys up Treasury bonds and other bonds from banks and prints money to buy them. That's supposed to get the ball rolling, says money manager and author Stephen Leeb.
Banks will have more money to lend. Interest rates will stay low. And both those factors hopefully will lead to stronger economic growth.
Typically, the Fed's role is to raise interest rates to control inflation or lower them to spur spending. Now that the interest rates are near zero, Fed Chairman Ben Bernanke has to try something else. Karen Petru is with Federal Financial Analytics. She says quantitative easing is an extraordinary measure.
This is not what Chairman Bernanke wants to see the Fed doing. It's what he thinks he has to do.
Bernanke tried quantitative easing once before during the financial crisis. In New York, I'm Stacey Vanek Smith for Marketplace.
A new survey out today indicates a 5% rise in Wall Street bonuses. How's that expected to play out? Marketplace's Scott Tong is with us from Washington with the latest. Good morning, Scott.
Good morning, Steve.
Deja vu, it seems. Why are we seeing these bonuses going up again?
More business in at least certain parts of the financial sector. The report comes from a compensation consultancy called Johnson Associates. It's based on publicly disclosed information and private surveys. And it thinks bonuses this year will increase at asset management firms. That includes hedge funds because these firms are, well, managing more assets. Also up at retail banks due to higher deposits. The bonuses are forecast to be down, though, for bond traders and stock traders. If you net it all out, it turns out to be about a 5% overall increase, Steve.
Now, people away from Wall Street, Scott, are going to be upset about this, right?
Well, they already are. I just spoke to Robert Monks in Portland, Maine. He runs a shareholder activist fund, and he says Wall Street and Main Street are in separate worlds.
We apparently have been comfortable committing the national resources to a single segment of our economy, the finance sector, at the same time as a state of recession exists for the rest of the economy.
Now, activists like Monks hope this leads to new limits on pay. And here in Washington, the head of the Securities and Exchange Commission has written to the industry calling on it to police itself as far as bonuses.
All right. Marketplace's Scott Tong in Washington. Scott, thanks.
You're welcome.
You may be interested to hear that Steve and I have just checked into the Frank Stanton Studios in Los Angeles. Or maybe you couldn't care less. Checking into places online is part of something called geolocation services. But a study out this morning from the Pew Research Center finds it's not for everyone. From Silicon Valley Marketplace's Steve Henn explains.
I have this app on my iPhone that lets me hold it up in the air and see pictures of people who are tweeting nearby. One click gives me directions to exactly where they are. And these aren't my friends. They're just random folks attached to photos.
Certainly at the moment, it's the geeks and the techies and your typical early adopters that are most likely to be using these applications.
Aaron Smith wrote the Pew Report. He found that only 4% of Americans online use these kinds of apps.
Obviously, there are some privacy issues and, you know, a lot of folks may not necessarily want everyone to know where they are at all hours of the day.
But investment and hiring in this new industry is booming. Mark Rottenberg is with the Electronic Privacy Institute.
Advertisers and service providers are very interested in getting access to information about where users are.
And Rottenberg thinks that just freaks people out. In Silicon Valley, I'm Steve Henn for Marketplace.
You're listening to the Midday Update for Thursday, November 4th. I'm Steve Chiotakis. For the latest look at the markets, go to our website, marketplace.org, and check out the numbers.
We're going to get a take now on the global perspective, what's happening in business and economics around the world, and how it affects the United States.
Certainly not the world's most glamorous product, but the fertilizer potash, you know what that is, Jeremy, right, has been one of the most sought-after resources in the business world. And today, a blow to the world's biggest mining company in its quest to grab a key part of the potash market. The Canadian government has blocked BHP Billiton's $40 billion takeover bid of the Canadian company Potash Corporation. And Marketplace's Stephen Beard is with us from London to explain the news and to explain the potash industry. Good morning, Stephen.
Hello, Steve.
Why has this mining company been rebuffed by the Canadian government?
The bids touched a raw nerve in Canada. The Potash Corporation, based in Saskatchewan, accounts for about 30% of the world supply of potash. As you say, a fertilizer, it's comprised of salts that are dug out of the ground. In a world which will have to grow a lot more food, this is considered a vital strategic resource for Canada. Max King of Investec Asset Management says Canada's Conservative government had to face the fact that there's a lot of hostility in Saskatchewan to this foreign takeover.
So you can't ignore the politics in situations like this, and Saskatchewan has quite a number of Conservative MPs who are fearful of losing their seats if this bid wasn't blocked. And in the real world, a lot of these decisions are based on politics.
And another reason for the hostility in Canada, there's been a number of foreign takeovers in recent years which have led to big job losses.
Now, we've been hearing about this for months, Stephen. Is the deal dead?
No, this is an interim decision. BHP has got 30 days to respond. It could come up with a revised offer with job guarantees, for example. This is not an easy decision for the Canadian government. On the one hand, it doesn't want to upset the voters, but it doesn't want to upset foreign investors either. It needs foreign investment.
All right. Marketplace's Stephen Beard reporting from London. Stephen, thank you.
Okay, Steve.
A mid-air drama near Singapore has forced the Australian airline Qantas to ground its entire fleet of Airbus A380s. A flight to Sydney made an emergency landing today after an engine was ripped off the plane. From Sydney, the BBC's Phil Mercer reports now on questions that this raises over the popularity of the biggest passenger plane in the world.
Passenger Christopher Lee was on board flight QF32 when it lost an engine en route to Sydney.
There was an explosion. There was a loud bang followed by another one and a rattling of the cabin.
This isn't the first problem with Airbus's two-story jumbo jet. Fuel and computer glitches have grounded several Airbus A380s belonging to Qantas before. The A380 is Airbus's most important plane project in years. Airbus engine maker Rolls-Royce and Qantas say they're jointly investigating the incident. As a precaution, Qantas chief executive Alan Joyce says the fleet will be grounded.
We would suspend those A380 services until we are completely confident that Qantas safe requirements have been met.
It's unusual for airlines to ground an entire fleet of planes, which highlights the seriousness of the incident. No American carrier flies the plane. In Sydney, I'm the BBC's Phil Mercer for Marketplace.
China began conducting its census this week, and economists are interested in how many properties sit empty in that country. It's a problem in the northwest city of Ordos in Inner Mongolia province, where parts of the city are completely vacant. Because of its geographic blessings, Ordos has the highest per capita GDP in China, and that's led to a couple of theories about all those empty houses. Marketplace China Bureau Chief Rob Schmitz reports.
This is the soundtrack to Ordos. There's so much construction here, you feel out of place without a hard hat. Fueling it is a wealth of coal and natural gas underneath this region. Above ground, they're celebrating. A fireworks display signals another place open for business. But what happens when you build a city and nobody comes? That's the dilemma behind Kangbashir, an entirely new city being built by the government of Ordos to house 300,000 people. 90% of the homes here are empty. The international press has called it a ghost town. But architect Mike Tunkey, who has worked on projects in the city, is optimistic for a couple of reasons.
The first is they have wealth, so they have the resources to make some changes. And the second is that there will be people in the Northwest who would be looking for a city like that if it offers them opportunities which, you know, are better than what they have.
China is in the early stages of the biggest rural to urban migration the world has ever seen. This northwestern region of the country lacks a strong economic center. With all its revenue, Ordos is making a calculated risk to fill that gap, says Tunkey. Economist Ting Lu agrees. He says as long as China needs fossil fuels, this region will be okay. But there is a potential problem on the horizon.
In many other parts of China, or in the, other parts of the world, resource-rich regions, a big problem for them is outflow of capital.
So Ordos is investing billions of dollars on itself instead of letting that money migrate elsewhere. But what about the 250,000 empty homes in the new city just waiting for people to move in? Ting admits Ordos probably went too far with some of its development. Even so, when you're the main coal supplier for a country as vast as China, you've got more than enough money to cover yourself. Reporting from Ordos, Inner Mongolia, I'm Rob Schmitz for Marketplace.
You're listening to the Midday Update for Thursday, November 4th. I'm Jeremy Hobson.
And I'm Steve Chiotakis. For the latest look at the markets, check out our website, marketplace.org, and click away at the numbers.
Tomorrow is a big day. It's one of the most important days of the month for economists. It's the day we get the monthly employment report from the Labor Department, which is where we find out how many jobs were lost or gained in the previous month and what the new unemployment rate is. Right now, it's 9.6%. So what's next for the people behind that number? Let's bring in our economics correspondent, Chris Farrell. Chris, welcome back to the show.
Well, thank you, Jeremy.
So we're getting this big jobs number tomorrow. Where do you think the new jobs are going to be coming from, both in terms of location and industry?
All right. The jobs are healthcare. Healthcare employment has been growing since the Great Recession and through this anemic recovery. And where are the jobs going to be? You know, they're in your major cosmopolitan cities, you know, cities that have education, healthcare, finance, information age type businesses. This is where people want to live, and this is where the job growth has been.
Now, a lot of people who have lost their jobs in the Great Recession, whether they be in big cities or small towns, are thinking maybe they'll get their old jobs back. Is that a realistic expectation, or are they going to have to really retrain themselves and change careers?
You know, I think it depends on your industry. Some industries, you know, they're doing fine and they've just had some cutbacks and they'll be rehiring. But so many industries today are shrinking. Media is a classic example. Or how about the U.S. auto industry? And if you're in that kind of an industry, you're going to have to get some education, some training, look at your skill set and say, well, okay, can I shift over to healthcare? Can I shift over into government? What about temp work? These are the kinds of things people are being forced to do.
Now, we had these big elections this week. Do you think that the government in the last couple of years has been making the long-term policy changes that it needs to make to prepare America for the jobs of the future?
Absolutely not. Absolutely not. Look, the government has been focused on the short term. Voters are angry. That's the message of the election. Not enough has been done in terms of jobs. But in terms of the long term job outlook, it comes down to education. But state and local governments, they're the primary players. They've been cutting back because of their big budget deficits.
Marketplace economics correspondent Chris Farrell, thanks so much for joining us.
Thanks a lot, Jeremy.
And finally, to the Canadian border near Detroit, a man who just had a lucky day at a Canadian casino. You know, Detroit and Windsor, Ontario are connected
right
by the
next to each other.
Bridge,
in fact, yeah. And one of them is lower than isn't that side of the border where you actually go
supposedly
south.
Windsor
to get
farther
into,
south.
Okay.
Yeah,
anyway,
cross
so
the
there we are
bridge.
At the border.
He's traveling back into the United States with almost $20,000 in cash in winnings from that casino, right?
But he wanted to avoid the rule that requires you to tell authorities if you're bringing $10,000 across the border. So he gives half the money to his traveling companion.
Yeah.
And both cross the border with slightly less than $10,000. Mm-hmm. Sounds like a good plan, doesn't it, Steve?
It does to me.
Well, authorities figured it out. And the punishment is, sadly, the government is keeping all of those casino winnings.
So they're not going to jail, right?
They're not
going
to go to jail. It was funny. It turned out that the penalty happened to be exactly $20,000.
It's amazing.
In that case. In Los Angeles, I'm Jeremy Hobson.
And I'm Steve Chiotakis. Still penniless, by the way. This is the Marketplace Midday Update.
American Public Media.
The world can-
can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.